This is HBR episode 1936 entitled, HBR Community News for December 2015, and is part of the series, HBR Community News. It is hosted by HBR volunteers, and is about 89 minutes long. The summary is, HBR Community News for December 2015.
This episode of HBR is brought to you by anhonesthost.com. Get 15% discount on all shared hosting with the offer code HPR15. That's HPR15. Better web hosting that's honest and fair at anhonesthost.com.
Hi everybody, my name is Ken Fallon, and you're listening to Hacker Public Radio Community News for December 2015. For those of you new to Hacker Public Radio, we are a community podcast. That means the shows are contributed by listeners like your good self. As it says on the website, your ideas, projects and opinions podcasted. We have new episodes every Monday through Friday, and we do this show, which is a look at what's been going on the HPR feed, which is a podcast feed. I'll quickly go through the shows, read some of the comments that have been left on the website, and we also go through some of the things that have been going through on the mailing list. Some months it's very quiet there. This month has been pretty busy. First things first, we'd like to welcome our new hosts, and I do have a tradition of butchering people's names, so please keep that in mind as we go through this thing. First host was Clinton Roy, Archer72, The Linux Experiment, and Cov. So welcome to you all, and long may you continue to participate in the community shows. So let's have a look first at last month's show, starting with 1921, the OpenNMS interview that Klaatu did at the All Things Open conference. He did quite a few interviews from there, and this is a network monitoring package, and for those of you who are doing back-end servers and the like, it will be a very interesting one to go and have a look at. The next day, the Linux Experiment, basically a few people decided to try Linux for a while out of their try multiple distributions and stuff, and they're basically challenging any of Hacker Public Radio as well to go ahead and do this. I think it's actually quite good because in order to experience a desktop, I've just switched over to KDE 5 on my wife's desktop, and I really don't like it. I really, really don't like it, and I'm saying to myself, is this me, or is this the way things are going to go? So live with it for a while, and then maybe it'll grow on you after a while. As it stands now, it is not as annoying as it was to begin with, so therefore I'm assuming a lot of it is me. So let's continue on with that. So yes, thank you for those guys coming in. And then we had Waking Up, the follow-on episode to Windigo's Waking Up series. So this is this had a comment from Windigo itself, one-upped. Nothing puts your crappy bash alarm clock into perspective like dynamic lighting and aesthetic music. Does the Roomba carry you a cup of coffee in the morning as well? Yes, that is what I was thinking. Windigo's house is, or sorry, Jezra, who did the show, house is very, very automated. And I've often said it before, and I'll say it again, that is a house I would very much like to go and visit if I ever do make it to the US. The following day, Ahuka, 1915, LibreOffice Impress. So this is the presentation part and how to put tables in there. And often you charts, pictures and movies and stuff. So you can also, he looked at those earlier, and now he went into putting tables in. And probably this is, you know, if you're doing a presentation, a small table like this is as good as anything, is kind of better and easier and less complicated than open up a spreadsheet, a dynamic spreadsheet inside of it. The day after, we had the community news, which is done by HPR volunteers. At the moment, Dave is feeling a bit ill, so our best wishes go out to him. And so I'm here flying my own some, which is not surprising, given most of people have used all their chat up on the New Year show. The following slot was 1917opensource.com, an interview with Ricky Ensley from opensource.com, and Tlatu has, I think, also published on there, or and it is a Red Hat sponsored site, I think, but I don't think they have editorial control, but it is a fabulous resource. And during this month, you're going to see one of their articles, a series of their articles, being narrated for us on this here HPR show. There was one comment on the community news episode, which is Charles and LJ, and he was referencing, you gotta love a site that lets you add content for free and then charges you to reference it later. And he was referring to Experts Exchange, which he thought was quite funny. You could rearrange it as Expert Sex Change. So yes, quite funny there. And the comment on episode 1917, which is opensource.com interview again, John Culp saying, a possible outlet, thanks for a great interview, and now thinking about possible article topics for there. I must say, I was thinking the same thing myself, but I have so much on my own plate right now, I don't think I need any more. Thank you very much. We had our old friend Zoke back again, and I'm delighted to have this interview with Dave Kennedy, one of the well-known people in the security world. And basically, at some training, Zoke managed to capture a few interviews with these guys. Very, very impressive. If you if you ever get a chance to go to DerbyCon, it's on my list of things I really like to do. And Dave Kennedy talks about how they do penetration testing and the like. So it's a must listen interview. Following day again, another interview from the same people, David Koblitz. Apologies for killing the name. And this was another interview as well in relation to pen testing. On the other side of the fence, we had the following day, 1920. Let me just check to see if there are any comments on these. The DerbyCon interview with Zoke, with Dave Kennedy, there was a comment from Frank. I used to play queues in CMUS. Once that queue around 20 to 25 minutes was done, CUMS goes back to a random library playback. Here's the catch. What if the random piece after the classical music is also classical? In such a case, you would not notice that it is time to get up, which is a problem I regularly encounter. I can't and really want to have two different collections to keep the two apart. I think actually a comment is slightly misplaced. It should have been attached to Jezra's episode about getting up. So not to worry, we will have the comment to ninjas, namely Dave, work on that one later. Privacy and security, as we said, 1920, the 21st in this series on privacy and security, SSH authentication keys by Ahuka, and about how to use public-private key pairs for authentication instead of passwords. And this is an excellent way to stop a lot of the password database attacks against your website, because simply you don't have a password at all. So definitely use an SSH on the public internet. This is something that you should do. It also means, I mean, if you use something like an SSH agent, you can keep the keys for all your login once, open up the keys with your SSH agent, and then you just simply SSH to a site, and it takes care of the username and or the authentication for you. So I use that all the time. First thing in the morning, I run my agent, and then I'm good for the whole day. How to Run a Conference, which was by Clinton Roy, and this was an absolutely excellent, not only about all the things that go right, but all the things that go wrong, and it makes me want to never, ever run a conference again. So hands off, hats off to everybody who does put conferences together. Amazing, amazing, amazing thing. So thank you, Clinton, for coming on board and sharing that one with us. The following day, we had Archer72 coming with the case to back up Google email. And the short enough show, but short, sweet, and to the point. Is up there for one of the shortest shows ever. So 57 seconds. However, Google Takeout, Thunderbird email, and import-export tools for Thunderbird basically explains exactly what you need to be able to do. You can also set up IMAP to a Google account. And while it's IMAP, it's not 100% IMAP, or at least doesn't seem to be to be 100% IMAP, as your email is not always removed as you would expect it to be.
So hey, Ken?
Yep, go ahead.
Hey, John Culp here.
Well, John, you're just going to save the day because I am here on my own. So let me turn on text-to-speech. Turning on push-to-talk, actually, is what I mean to say.
Right.
So do you want to start again, or shall we
We don't have to start again. We could just jump in where you were. I had almost forgotten about this, but then I thought I should probably check in just in case Ken is all by himself.
Thank you very much. So kind of you. I'm already up to 1923, Klaatu and System okay. 76.
I can hear myself. Are you on speakers, or do you have headphones?
Yes, I was on headphones. Hold on one sec. I'll put those on. How's that? That's got to be better.
Sorry, I was taking a drink of coffee there. That's good. I don't hear an echo now. Sounds good.
Yeah, no, I was thinking, well, if I'm on by myself, I'll just get rid of the push to talk and put on the speakers, because then I can hear
Makes
people
sense.
Coming.
I would have done the same thing.
So System 76, if people don't know them, they're dedicated to producing computers with Linux on them, basically. And seem like they have some very, very nice machines out there.
I've often wanted to buy one of these, and then I'm always... you know, the great thing about buying one would be that, you know, the guaranteed hardware compatibility with Linux, whereas when you buy a Windows machine and then wipe it out and put Linux, you run a little bit of risk unless you've done a lot of research ahead of time. But somehow the prices are not terrible or anything, but I can always find that I can get a Windows machine for $100-$200 less.
Yeah, I get that. And I had the same thing myself. From suppliers over here, but I made the conscious decision to pay the premium because sometimes you just have to send a signal. I do not want a machine with Windows on it, because every machine that you buy with Windows on it is it's another notch on the bedpost, basically.
Yeah, the next time I buy a brand new one, I probably will go with something like the System 76. Although the last computer I bought was one. I was inspired by NY Bill, who bought on eBay a ThinkPad T210, a T201, I think it was, for something like $90, and put Linux on it. And so then I bought, I did the same thing. I found on eBay, I won an auction for $107, got a ThinkPad T201 for... it's a pretty nice little machine. It's got a Core i5 processor, 4 gigs of RAM, and I figure buying a used machine that has known hardware compatibility, I'm at least doing some, I don't know, environmentally sound thing to do. I know that, what's his face, on the Software Freedom Law Center show used to always recommend buying used computers, Bradley Kuhn, I think that was it.
Yeah, and he's, I agree, and those ThinkPads are nice machines, it has to be said.
Yeah, I like it. I don't think it's going to be my main machine, but it's a really nice laptop for that kind of money. Just over $100, it's hard to beat.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, 1924, port forwarding. And I like these because in 1900, Ahuja suggested changing the default SSH port and I asked, why not employ port forwarding? Which is actually something I was thinking of at the time as well.
Yeah, I normally will... I don't think I had used port forwarding in quite the way that that he's talking about using here. I mean, what I did normally was change the default port of my SSH server and then just use port forwarding on my router to make sure that SSH queries went to the right machine. And he's not talking about doing that precisely here, I don't think.
I thought he was talking about that you open the port on your router, and then if it comes in on 2222, you forward it to 22 on an internal machine, which is what I do.
Right. I think that's how he said to do it. And the way I've always done it was to change it from the default 22 port to something else.
On the server itself?
On the server also.
Okay. That's what Kevin was saying, Hookah, in his show. So, I'm more inclined to do what 50 was saying, because you have to go to the port, you have to go to the router anyway to set up your port forwarding.
Yeah, makes sense.
And Kevin replied saying, it was a great show. I'm really happy that my friend 5150 has continued the conversation on this topic. What I love to see in HPR, it's like listening to the conversation we might have together at a conference. And that is exactly yeah. It when people do reply shows like this. It's absolutely awesome.
Yep, agreed.
And you can happily disagree with somebody. Don't feel that you have to agree with everybody. If I say something wrong in a show, please do a show to correct me. I won't take any offense at it. Yeah, unless you call me an idiot. Everybody
we'll
makes
be friendly
mistakes,
about
you know,
it.
Be friendly about it. But yeah.
So should we post comments and do a follow-up show, or just do one or the other?
In my persona as a HBR
record show,
record a show, but do both, I say. Or when you comment, the person who did the show reply back on, you know, you should do a show about that.
Yep. I often put that in one of my comments.
And then your list of shows increases, and that falls under that you've promised me a show.
Right.
There you go.
I mean, you know, as many shows as I've done this year, and it's probably been 30, 25 or 30 shows,
yeah,
I still
there,
have
yeah.
I have a list of topics that I want to do that's still like a dozen long.
Funny how that happens when you're in conversations with me, John, isn't it? I was actually thinking about that very thing, because I wasn't at Og Camp this year, and I was looking at the stream of the Ogcast, the Ogcasters presentation panel thing, and all the hosts that were there, none of them had done more shows than Dave Morris. You know, if you count the shows Dave did and the community news shows, he had done double what most people had recorded, and was at least 10 higher than all any of the other people on the panel.
Well, that means some of those people need to record some shows, doesn't it?
It does. I don't think we're boisterous as we need to be on HBR. Controversial is the word I'm looking for.
Maybe not. I don't know. I found that once you kind of get yourself a good workflow for these things, I don't want to say that anybody should be intimidated from doing a show for the very first time or anything. But after you've done several of them, it just gets so much easier that you just got to get over those first couple of ones and then do. I mean, I recorded 3 shows in 3 days this past week, and I just, you know, now that I had the time, I did it. But it's not that hard once you kind of get in the flow of it.
Yeah, and if you do that and record a few shows, you know, you can put them out once every month, or you know, every few weeks, or back to back, or whatever you want to do. So don't necessarily need to be coming out all at the same time.
I usually do every 2 weeks, although I've got one. I haven't posted the third one yet because I'm waiting to see whether a desperate need arises.
Yeah, good plan. Then we had show 1925, KDE and Live, Part 1, Introduction to KDE by Geddes, who had previously done a narrated show on his own accord based on an article that was in The Awesome Epic Guide to KDE Part 1, and that was in Linux Voice magazine. And he mentioned at the end of that that he'd be interested in doing some more shows. And of course, I got in contact with him because I had just read an excellent, excellent series of articles from Seth Kenlan, who's known to the community as well in other forums, who had been on opensource.com and had done a series on Cadian Live. And I think it transfers well to audio. If you can look at some of the pictures from opensource.com, that might help. But I think it transfers very well to audio.
It did. I love this. And I think this is one of the better video tools on Linux that I've found. I've tried numerous ones, but this one is the one I keep coming back to if I have to do any kind of video editing for its ease of use. You know, it's not as powerful as something like, I've heard of people using Blender to do some video editing. But this one has not nearly so steep a learning curve, and it just does what you need.
You know, wait until the end of this series and then see if you still hold by that statement of it not being as powerful.
Yeah, maybe I just don't know what its power really is. And to be honest, I don't do a whole lot of video editing. I do much more audio than video.
Yeah. And Geddes has one of these reading the telephone book voices.
It's good.
Popey would say.
Popey. I really like this. I'm looking forward to the next one.
The National Measurement Institutes was HPR 1926, a short overview of the institutes and what they do. Now, right here, this is a show that I don't think anyone would think of submitting, but it is absolutely a perfect show because it nails the topic right there.
Yeah, these are really interesting and cool. I would never have thought of doing something like this, but it was great. You know, one of those things when you wonder if this is going to be of interest to hackers.
Absolutely. And you know, I was just thinking about that. You know, the whole need to have weights and measures is such a fundamental thing to governments and organizations of governments. You know, this has been going back for years upon years where merchants have been trying to rip off the people, and the people go to the magistrate and the magistrate goes to the king and the king chops off people's thingies. And, you know, the baker's dozen being 13 comes from the weights and measures thing, because they were required to make, you know, if they didn't supply 12 loaves, then if they shortchanged anyone in order to get over that, they gave them an extra loaf. So, yeah, very interesting.
So that was a security measure to make sure that nobody ran afoul of the dozen thing?
Yeah, exactly. Because if they weighed all the loaves and they had shrunk or something, the weight was supposed to be whatever the weight was of 12 loaves. So in order to get around that, they added another one in to make sure that they weren't going to lose their house or parts of their anatomy.
See, I need to have that explanation like printed up on a little business card size thing, because like my wife always, when she goes to Target to get bagels, they've got really good bagels at the Target superstores here for whatever reason. But when she explains to the cashier that she's getting a baker's dozen, because there's a special price for a baker's dozen, These poor young people have never heard of a baker's dozen before, and she has to explain to them every single time that no, this really does mean 13. It doesn't mean 12.
Oh dear, oh dear, oh dear. Okay, yes, here's a QR code. There you go.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Excellent. The following day, Tlatu talks to Ansible at the All Things Open conference. He actually got to do quite a lot of shows. And that's a cool way to do graphs and automation and stuff like that. Manage your system, crunch complexity.
Right. I'm trying to refresh my memory as to what this one was about. The notes for this episode are very sparse, and so I'm having trouble remembering exactly what this one was about. But I've enjoyed every one of these things that Tlatu has done at the conference.
Well, according to the website, is a radically simplified IT automation engine that automates cloud provisioning, configuration management, application deployment, and infrastructure service orchestration, and many other IT needs.
Sounds like something we all need.
Yeah, this is the it's a bit like Puppet or Chef or CF Engine, where you do but it's all based on SSH, so you know, copies configurations over. Like, if you're into server configuration management, it's definitely something that'd be on your radar.
Okay, well, I do really low level server management, but it's just the servers in my house and one at the office, so I've never needed to keep an eye on dozens of servers at once or anything like that. So this whole thing, it's a new kind of tool to me.
Also, a new way of thinking. I worked for a while in a place that was well organized like this, and they use CF Engine, and it's a completely different mindscape. Rather than connecting to the servers, you never actually connect to the servers. You do everything through the configuration manager, and the server comes on, and it just appears, and then it's configured, and you know, you're finished with it, and then it goes away.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's. I mean, there's a lot of these, especially for, you know, your Amazon type things where you bring up servers and, you know, they're dynamically provisioned, and then when you don't need them, you just get rid of them because it costs you money, and you take over basically on one server, and then the load increases 5 seconds later, you have four more servers in the air, and so it continues. We should get some people to actually do some shows and that sort of stuff. I would.
That would be fascinating.
I find it fascinating, but I'm also not into it, which is a funny thing to say.
Yeah, that whole generating new servers on the fly thing is really interesting to me. I can't imagine a scenario where I would need to do it, but it's really interesting to hear people talk about it.
Yeah, absolutely. The following day, we had Cove's Jams, which is 1928, and it's reviving a really old tradition we have here on HPR, and indeed before that on Today with a Techie, which was Creative Commons licensing, playing Creative Commons licensed music, and it was in the All Songs Considered series. And I would like to take my hat off to Cove, because the first time I saw this, somebody sending in 8 songs, and I'm going, oh right, now I'm gonna have to make sure that all the Creative Commons licenses are in order. But every single one was absolutely all of them are CC by SA, no problems there, so well done to him. And also nice music.
Cool. Yeah, well, I may have to go back and listen to that one. I'll be honest, I didn't listen to this one because I don't normally want to listen to a music podcast. Music is kind of something I do all day at work every day.
And so the
only music podcast I ever listen to is the Bugcast.
I'm with you.
But I might go back and listen to it. It should be noted that this series, All Songs Considered, is the same title as something on National Public Radio over here in the United States.
You don't say.
Is that something you guys are aware of?
Yeah, considering that Hacker Public Radio was picked because it was NPR, HPR.
Okay, I got you. Very good.
I believe, at least. Although it's not NPR anymore. It's International Blah something.
NPR still exists. I don't know if All Songs Considered is under their supervision anymore.
Because Science Friday has moved off of NPR or to International something.
Might be a Public Radio International.
That's the one, yeah. PRI, Public Radio International. Anyway, there were some comments on this. Shadowy Figure chived in, going, nice mix, Gov. Thanks for sharing. I found the lineup of different genres refreshing. Looking forward to the next show.
And T. Cook, TCUC, says, nice, I can't wait for more. I've heard a few episodes showcasing good CC music, and I like having an easy way to listen to curated CC music. Keep them coming. Smiley face.
David L. Wentz Wilson said, yes, I ran to my desk at work to bring me Billy Korg's Problem. Thanks for an excellent jam, Cove. So, if you did like that show, consider doing your own. If you didn't like that show, consider doing your own of favorites that you like.
Yeah.
See what I did there, John? See what I did there?
I do. If you didn't like it, then you got to show them what really good music is like, huh?
Yes, indeedy. by the way, if anyone has found a flash, has lost a flashlight somewhere around Lafayette, Louisiana, the next show The next show might be of interest to you. 1929, and I was thinking, God, this torch must be, you kind of run over by cars as you were picking it up.
It did.
Unbelievable.
It's a truly amazing piece of gear. I had never seen anything like it. And yeah, I mean, it's you have to like hold it in your hands and shine it in the pure dark to really understand how great this is. So I thought I had to record an episode about it.
I must say, I do have a little bit of a flashlight, I won't say fetish now. It's not a fetish, but I do have quite a lot of torches around, it has to be said. And I was thinking, I really want one of these.
It's well worth the money. I mean, it does cost a lot, but man, the quality is astounding. So I even if you spend over here on Amazon, it's $125. I don't think you would feel like you got ripped off.
Yeah.
I mean, it's still a lot of money to pay for a flashlight.
It is. But again, if you're going, you know, if your job requires you to have a flashlight, then I would like one that isn't going to crap out of me after 5 minutes.
Yeah, the main thing would be not to lose it.
Absolutely, or have your name engraved on the thing.
Yeah, well, they do come with serial numbers, so you can keep track. I mean, I think the police department keeps track of their inventory that way. Each officer is assigned a flashlight with a specific serial number, and that's how they control the inventory. But, you know, the police department here, when I contacted them, they said, no, we're not missing any. Mm-hmm. And so I got to keep it.
Yeah,
so
all I
had to do was buy a charger for, what, $28? And, man, I didn't even hesitate because, I mean, even before I found this thing, even spending $28 would have seemed like too much for a flashlight to me.
Yeah. And there was a comment on this from a shadowy figure. Thank you for this timely episode. Hey, Dr. Culp. I just wanted to take a minute out to say this is the sort of episodes I tune in for. For one,
I see what you did there.
Yeah, there you go. Ba-doom-tsh. Secondly, they're entertaining. But as for the flashlight, could you take a chainsaw-resistant desk for it?
Oh, boy. That's funny. I get that now that I just listened
exactly.
to his episode.
I was going, what was he on about? All right.
Yeah, I didn't get that comment until...
We will explain that one later on.
Yeah, in the next month's episode.
It's later on. It's in this month. It's in this show. So I think
we'll it is? Okay.
Yeah.
I just listened to it this morning or yesterday, though, so I'm only now getting this joke. I saw the comment when it came in, but I didn't get the chainsaw-resistant desk joke there.
Excellent. The following day, actually, I just wanted to say on that, you know, in the, I know from being a mechanical engineer that things are deliberately designed to break after a period of time, you know, so you make it for, it must last so long, but no longer than that. So mm-hmm. It's like the sweet spot, but it is nice. It always guiled me as an engineer that you would do that. You know, you should build stuff to last if you're going to the trouble. And I think we as consumers should ensure that if we are doing stuff, we buy stuff that is going to last where possible.
Where possible, yeah, but man, it does
but
have
do
a
you
steep
know?
Price tag.
How do you know beforehand? You know, that's the thing.
It's hard to know.
Yeah, exactly.
One way to know is that this is the kind of flashlight that all the law enforcement uses, that search and rescue teams use. I mean,
because they
know they can count on it.
That's the thing. And our washing machine is, on a separate note, is going, you know, just after the warranty's up, you know, and exactly as often as I said it would. And you just, you know, there's one that we want to get, but it's actually three times the price of it. So you have to work out, is it going to be worth it for the number of washes that you get? So,
well, the other side of that would be to, if you can't get the kind that will last forever, at least get the kind that's not too hard to work on yourself and you know, install a new belt in your dryer or your washer or whatever.
I'm actually considering it's only a small leak, so it's got to be a pipe or something. So if somebody's got a how to repair a washing machine show in the pipeline, fire it over to me.
I haven't done that, but I have done a few repairs on our clothes dryer, put in new roller wheels and a new belt and a new blower wheel and stuff like that. I didn't record a show about it, though. Maybe I should have.
Yeah, do. And if you've also got some kits that you've purchased, Like John here, well, not everybody's lucky as John, but if you have some kit that you purchased that was a bit, I don't know, should I spend so much on that, and it worked out or it didn't work out, I'd love to hear about it as well. You know, rock solid recommendations, that would be stuff we would like to hear about, stuff that would be of interest to hackers. Okay, yep. Let's move on. A Systemd Primer, episode 1930 by Clinton Roy. And what it, I think this was a presentation that he had done as well, and also a nice little overview of Systemd for us. I think who was it did already did a episode on Systemd? Let me just look that up now.
Yeah, I can't recall that immediately, but I like this episode. I've already been using Systemd. I think most of us have probably had our systems switched over to Systemd, and some of us maybe kicking and screaming because we're so used to the init system.
Yeah, exactly.
But you know, it's I don't really I think it works pretty well as far as I can tell.
Yeah, it was Steve Smethurst, I think, episode 1672, Systemd for Learners.
Okay.
And we just need one more Systemd episode, and it'll be a series.
Somebody write, do one about how to make a Systemd startup script, maybe?
Yeah, that's, yeah, exactly. And I understand this. I've worked on Solaris and AIX as well, and they have similar things, but I don't particularly like the way it's going. On the other hand, it is really nice the way they bring up NFS shares and stuff that... if you do that via Systemd, you can use NFS shares quite nicely on the laptop. So, to like it, I'm afraid.
Well, I don't. I think it seems like on my system, I can still use the old init start and stop methods, and they work. So I don't know if they're both things still running side by side, or if there just is some kind of shoestring workaround where if you run one of those old etc init restart commands or something, it just knows what to do.
I think when you run it on Fedora, at least, it goes reassigning to, you know, it gives you a one-liner saying, yeah, you've asked for it in it, but I'm actually running it through system control.
Okay. I'm using Debian, and it might do something similar. I should probably find out.
Anyway, Frank commented, hopefully it'll be on the right show this time. Nicely done. I do appreciate the big picture overview. It provides a context and frame of reference that many stories I've read about Systemd do not. And I think that's actually one of the things that annoys me about when you make a big switch like this, is the time is spent on putting in the code, but the time is not spent putting in the getting the word out there about how it's going to work and stuff.
Yeah, and then what happens is you end up going by hearsay. You just keep hearing things from people who have said, oh, it hosed my system, it did this, I hate it, and then you just get a lot of fear, uncertainty, and doubt running around. Whereas I don't know, it seems like this has not, I remember when Systemd was first deployed on Arch Linux, I was running Arch at the time, and it hosed my laptop for a while, and I mean, and that kind of thing, I guess if you're running Arch, you kind of take that with a certain diffidence, you know, you don't worry too much about it, but on Debian, if that happens, it's very upsetting.
Yeah, I've had the last release of Debian where Systemd was introduced, and it wasn't Systemd that caused the issue. It was incredibly, incredibly flaky. I had to completely rebuild a server and work that had been running for years. I was extremely unhappy about
I bet.
Poor quality of the Debian upgrade. But anyway, the following day was another show by Amin. Can you do that for me?
I could try. Amunizip? Amunizp? I don't know. I don't know what that is.
Well, the show was extremely interesting to hackers. Atomic force microscopy, nanoscale tools, and atomic force microscopes. Basically, an overview of everything when you get down to the nano or micro level. Just this whole thing, I find it super fascinating when you get down to that level of, you know, that's zoomed down to that scale, it's amazing. And this was an absolutely fantastic overview of the tools and how they work, or the microscopes, how they work.
I agree. Totally awesome. Way over my head, and I didn't understand it, but it's fascinating. I mean, just thinking about how people can work on anything so small makes my head spin. And so, it's great to hear somebody who actually knows how to do it.
It's I remember we needed to, when I was working as a, not as a mechanical engineer, but as, in a place where there was mechanical engineers, mechanical engineering was ongoing. There were some things that they needed to, you know, really zoom down on, and they had to send off some things to try and get to check wells to see if one of their wells was, whether it was, what type of fracture was occurring within the well, and basically they were doing a root cause analysis. So they sent it off to be, you know, investigated with these nano type, or, you know, really small views. And I thought at the time that was so cool when we got the
cool.
images back. Yeah, it's awesome.
Very, very cool.
Probably wasn't even down to a level like this, but still awesome. Anyway, there were two comments to this. Do you want to do the first?
Sure. Comment number one by Mysterio 2. Great show. Interesting and informative. Keep them coming. And of course, we all agree with the keep them coming part.
Absolutely. And a shaggy figure was going around leaving messages everywhere. Good job. Good job keeping us interested with a nice flow of interesting information. Looking forward to more. Couldn't agree more.
Yep.
Okay. Klaatu interviews Grafana, was it Grafana? A powerful and elegant way to explore and share dashboards and data within your team. This is used by loads of projects and is like a graphical engine, and the graphs are absolutely gorgeous.
Cool. I've never seen it before or even heard of it, because this is just not the area that I work in, but it was really interesting.
Just go have a look at some of the graphs that they have on there. We use it in work to for various different things, which I'm not allowed to say because blah, blah, blah. But we use it in work quite a lot. Our tools that use these graphs in work, and you can bring in salespeople in and they, you know, they get it. It's like the graphs are of the quality that you see in CSI, you know, that sort of stuff.
I'm looking at some now. It really is beautiful. It's great.
And a Shagudui figure says, good interview, Klaatu. Hi, Klaatu. Good job of asking questions and getting to the point and following up. Looking forward to more as always. You've got good radio skills. Yes, he does. And the HBR Audiobook 11 Street Candles. And do you know what annoyed me about this one the most?
No, what?
It took so bloody long to get here. Oh, this was a... Have you read this book, Street Candles?
I just started, you know, I started listening to the to this episode, and they were raving about it so much that I stopped listening to the episode and started listening to the book. And,
very good. That is exactly what you should do, and I'm not going to spoil it anymore.
Right.
If you, it's, I
yeah, I've not finished the book yet. I'm about 15 or 16 chapters in, and I actually went and bought the ebook as well from the Kobo store, David wonderfully, he's one of the authors who provides the EPUB without DRM, so we all appreciate this, and I don't mind paying the $5.99 for a non-DRM file. And of course, the first thing I did was to hack it to make it look the way I wanted to.
Of course.
But yeah, I'm enjoying it. You know, sci-fi and space opera, it's not really my deal most of the time, although I've read all of the Nathan Lowell books. And I like them, but I mainly got this one because Lost in Bronx is a guy that I go way back with, all the way to my first experiences on the Linux Outlaws user forums, where I first met NY Bill and Jezra and all those folks. I just wanted to support his work. But it's a really good book, too.
He is a very, very talented guy. The reason I'm here behind this microphone is because of an episode he did on HPR. About pug fading and, you know, the correct way to approach it. And so at the time I applied his knowledge to suggesting that we reinvigorate HPR, and Yep. So here we are.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go on, go on.
I was just saying that it looks like there is a follow-up episode to this coming up where they interview David. And
looking
so I'm really looking forward to that.
And his stuff goes from comedy right up to dark. And they mentioned it in this book as well, but there's the one he did, another one, Blue Heaven, which was very, very thought-provoking. It's still classed that as one of the best pieces of literature I've read, and I'm not talking about space, whatever. I definitely would class it among their pieces of classic works. Anyway,
cool. Yeah, I really appreciate the guys doing this episode, because it turned, you know, I was aware that David did these kinds of things, but it, you know, when you get busy doing whatever you do every day, you kind of forget to check and see if there's anything new out. And so I was glad that they did this, so I go and check it out.
And the audiobook club apparently is going strong still, which is excellent. And I need to find out what the next week's show or the next month's book is, because I haven't downloaded it yet.
I saw what it was, but I've forgotten now. It seems like it's something that we all have heard of before. But I'm just, never mind.
The Call of
Cthulhu.
That'd be the one. H.P. Lovecraft.
Remember? Oh, yeah, it's a Lovecraft, right. Lovecraft is classic stuff from the, 30s and 40s, 50s? I don't know. It's from quite a while back.
Fair enough. I'm downloading it as we speak.
All right.
The following day was part two of the saga of Mego T-02 by a shadowy figure. And I told him off a little, or I asked him about comments, about basically feedback. And this is marked as... okay, let's deal with the show. It is excellent series. I love it. I don't know why. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I love it because of the genre, which I always loved anyway, or whether it's because of all the in-jokes in there. So I'm wondering if somebody not from HBR is listening to not familiar with all the people he's talking about, would get as much out of it as we do.
I doubt it, but they might enjoy it anyway, I think. For us, it's hilarious. I mean, it cracked me up to hear him make references to episodes that I've done about the Lafayette Public Library's makerspace.
That's my $2, awesome, yeah.
The $2 microphone made an appearance, and
I really Dave loved Mad it. Dog Morris comes in.
Exactly.
I just think this is so absolutely not Dave Morris. If you
right.
met him.
Yeah, quiet, unassuming Dave.
Yeah, exactly. It just cracked me up.
Yeah, it was great.
Some comments to that was from a shadowy figure. He updated the show notes at the comments, which I need to clear out. And I need to also come up with a better way of having hosts update the comments after they've posted the show.
Yeah.
But anyway, we have a list and very little time. Anyway, Frank says...
Lost you there.
Okay. It was a rainy day, gloomy, sad, and empty. There was rain and not much else. I had some errands to run, gloomy or not, errands must be run. I found myself driving down the street with my little pickup, recycling, waiting to be recycled in the bed, listening to some fellow who calls himself a shadowy figure. He was saying stuff. I wanted a drink. But I'd left the scotch at home, and any scotch is better than anything else. But if you got no scotch, you have to make do. I was beginning to wonder to myself, a shadowy figure, fellow taking his schlick, one step too far. And then he said something, and I found myself laughing out loud all by myself in my little pickup truck.
Nice. Yeah, that comment probably, and your method of delivery won't make a whole lot of sense unless you've heard this episode and the last one, but it was really funny. And then I left a comment just saying that I loved it, and how he made reference to my Lafayette Public Library thing and the $2 microphone. And by the way, the $2 microphone is my mic of choice nowadays.
Yeah?
I use it for almost everything.
I need to go and get myself one of them.
If I were you, I'd buy five.
Yeah?
I think that's what Dave of the Love Bug, the Love Bug Dave?
Yeah,
I think he bought a pack of five of them, and he's been using them. There was some reason he needed one at the church where he goes. I think they needed a replacement for their microphone there, and he said this was better than the ones that they were paying $40 for.
Wow.
And I use it with my phone and with my Zoom, and man, it's great. It sounds, it's not professional quality, but man, it sounds pretty good, and especially for $2.
Just sending myself a note about that.
Yeah, I've got a link to the device on my episode about the $2 microphone.
Yeah, I guess you did. Okay, so where were we now? That was all the shows.
That's all the episodes.
Yeah. I really hope Shadowy Figure does some more shows. Now I've got a question for everybody. Is that show, what's the word, clean, explicit? And the reason I ask is this. I don't really give a rat's ass myself because I can understand why it's needed in the ham radio thingy. But on the iTunes show, we're marked... The whole HPR feed is marked as explicit, but the shows themselves can be marked as clean or not explicit. And I know that if you go to the HPR Get Shows, the RSS feed, that you will, there's the options in their advanced settings. You can filter out based on whether your feed is explicit or not. And we did that because people are using the HPR shows, are downloading that and playing the stuff over PA systems. So,
really? Not that.
So, the other thing is, if we were, as most of our shows are, quite frankly, technical in nature, 95% of them never have any, you know, rude, quote, rude words or not in them.
It's all because of Jezra.
Well, perhaps not. So the thing is, if we removed the explicit on the Hacker Public Radio main feed, that would give us more publicity. Not that I particularly worried about that, but then we would need to rely on the explicit tag being correctly assigned on each of the individual shows. So
right.
To finish off my point, the only reason I will not be making that decision, folks, because I have my own moral sets of views, and I believe that children should know how to curse properly within the confines of their home, and they should know how to do it, not to do it in public, and you'll give people the correct respect that they deserve and whatever. So it doesn't matter to me, but I can definitely see that it would matter to other people. And if we incorrectly assign a show and then and it's reported to iTunes, iTunes simply throw people off the iTunes feed. And we do get a percentage of people coming in through iTunes still.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, I don't remember hearing anything in that episode that was explicit, was there?
Yeah, but you see, it's not, that's the thing. The explicit thing, as far as the US, you're coming from the US, you know what explicit is because you listen to the shows and you're used to it. But to me, here, you're not allowed to have, blatant smoking, blatant drinking, you know, referring to, I don't know.
Oh, I see.
It's because
okay.
It goes, okay. And this, Tlatu was commenting on, because Tlatu had uploaded a image, you know, a avatar from a horror film that I would have considered to be an explicit image, as opposed to, you know, people saying the F word or whatever. Mm-hmm. So explicit has to be, if we're using explicit, and this is a global thing, then as I put it on the website, if you're putting explicit stuff in, then you need to make sure that it's not being explicit for anybody anywhere in the world, basically.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Now think about that for a while, you know.
Yeah, I don't have time to track down that kind of information.
And but, you can't even get it for the US. You cannot get a list of the words that are considered explicit. The TV studios do not have them. They have their own word of a list of about 60 words that you're not allowed to say. And then if you deviate from that, they get fined, and then they okay, we know that's a word that we're not allowed to say, and the fines are significant.
I thought it was the FCC that would have that information.
They do not publish what it is because they...
That's a moving target,
I guess. Yeah, it's a moving target, exactly. And what I find funny here is that some of the words that are extremely rude in Ireland are used in everyday conversation here as, you know, just a naughty word. Hold on one second. So, it's an absolute minefield. I don't want to go down into it. So I'm happy with any host picking whatever they feel is correct, but I just want everybody to know, if I ask that question, the reason I'm asking that question, and that I don't particularly care, but if it comes to it and say, for example, John, you put up a show and you market it as clean and it's explicit for some reason, which I doubt, but that I want to make sure that you I consider this show what I've said to be clean and safe for appropriate audiences. Then I want to know that I can stand behind you, and that later on it wasn't. We got thrown out because I accidentally mislabeled your feed when you actually intended it to be explicit. You see my point?
I do see it,
and I do. I have contacted more than one, quite a lot of people in the past about this particular one, and I just want to make it clear, I'm not. I need to ask the question. I don't particularly want to ask the question, and which is just for me, it's easier if all the shows are marked explicit, then I don't have to worry about it. But then, nobody has anything to listen to on the other shows. But I would say, just as a HPR guy, you should always listen to all the shows before you have them publicly listened to by minors or somebody who would be offended.
Yeah, I call that proof listening. And I do it at least two times for everyone I upload. I listen to at least two or three times.
I don't. I just mark it explicit and be done.
Well, to be fair, I'm not always listening for that. I'm listening for just whether it's working or not, or whether I just make sure one last time that I really did put the intro and outro and all of that stuff.
Yeah. Okay. Shall we do the community or the mail list? I've got a link here on the HPR website. Paste and send. And that's got the archive for December.
Okay, going now.
So we had Hunky Magoo and 5150 basically decided to be in the lead for the HPR show. So rather than reading all the news, I'll just kind of summarize it. They recorded the HPR show. I put on a recording here as well for early. They had said it was just going to be limited to 6 p.m. in the U.S., 6 p.m. UTC, basically the U.S. time period. And but I set the recording up anyway, and it just recorded ones and zeros, basically zeros. So we have to thank John Neustetter, obviously, for hosting the Mumble server, and this is the Mumble server that we're actually using now. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but he's got a whole server there for various different shows that are open source musicians podcasts, for example, the Python Experiment, Unseen Studio, Podnuts. Got lots of rooms there for recording shows, and he very kindly does it for us.
Yeah, that's very nice. Thank you, John.
And we don't thank him enough for that. Kevin Wisher also provided a stream of the Mumble server, and he just set that up by himself and went ahead with it. It was absolutely awesome. Taj Sara, can you please pronounce that? Taj, I think. Provided.
I don't see the name.
Hold on a sec. These were on the website, so I just. There it is.
Am I looking in the wrong place?
I pasted it into the chat.
Okay, hang on one sec. See Josh Knapp, Honky Magoo, and where did you put it? Taj Sara?
That's the one, Taj Sara. Why can't I say that? Provided the Ethernet pad. Bert.
Yeah, that was cool. Bert Yerke?
Sounds good to me. Provided the funds to extend the bandwidth of the Mumble server for the period of time that we were doing it. Normally it's quite low. Dave Lee of the Bogcast offered the use of his Mumble server and associated infrastructure. And of course, we need to thank Josh Knapp, who is from anhonesthost.com and a host here on HPR, for providing the HPR infrastructure.
Awesome.
And of course, Honky Magoo and 5150 for putting it together, and thankfully editing the show, which is something that slice and dice it, guys, is my advice. Slice and dice it.
Well, I'm pretty sure that they were going to use the truncate silence thing liberally on this, because there were long periods of silence.
There were indeed. So other than that, we had a question about the show notes, which was the JavaScript, what you see is what you get thing.
Oh, no.
Well,
not again. The show notes.
You know what we're what Dave and I have decided to do is we are going to now have a drop-down list on the website, which will have it'll just default to, you know, plain old text. Then you'll have plain text for formatting, which will be just the whole thing will be wrapped in pre-tags, and then you can select your markdown and you can select HTML, and whatever you select, that's what it's going to be processed as.
That'll work. There's something similar to that on the learning management system we use at the university on Moodle. In your profile, you can select whether to have a WYSIWYG editor or use a plain text window. And I use the plain text, but underneath the window, there's a drop-down menu with four options. There's one where it's plain text, then there is HTML, there's Markdown, and then the fourth is Moodle auto format, which it, I guess, just tries to figure out what you're doing and apply appropriate formatting. But it works really, really well.
Yeah, we're just going to, I think Dave and I are both spending too much time on fixing show notes for people. So it would be better to just make that option available and then allow people the option to go back and edit it themselves.
Love it.
There was an FTP password change because I'm an idiot, basically, and I didn't...
No.
Well, I did. I was in a conversation and I thought I was having a private, you know, admin conversation, and I leaked far too much information out. And most people should be aware of, yeah, just be careful about it, I guess.
What an opportunity to update the password.
I put myself in the corner for a while. Let me just say that. Josh,
it's all good, man.
Josh upgraded the GitLab as well. He continues to plod away improving stuff on the back end, and you know, when we say we're the admins, that's not really true, more like volunteers, or facilitators might be a better word. And Josh is happily working there on that.
Excellent.
Lord D, scale 14x is going ahead. I forwarded that on, and Lord D is going, and hopefully we'll be able to get some interviews out of it.
I'm sorry, I must be looking at it. Are you seeing all of these messages in sequence somewhere?
Or, yep.
Because I'm seeing a...
I'm jumping over all the HPR community off topic ones. You should see December 2015 archived by thread. Do you have that?
Yeah, but it looked like you were going to... You jump backwards from the password change to Lord Drakenblut?
Yes. Go with it. Go with it, John.
Okay. Sorry. I'm just trying to make sure I'm looking at the same thing you are.
Then, I'm going to skip over the New Year show ones. They're not really relevant at the moment.
Oh, wait. No. I'm sorry. Lord Drakenblut had something after all those community news things. I see it now.
Yeah.
Got it.
Okay. So let's skip over the New Year show ones as well. He had to do short version. The people running the NOC aren't being too helpful to issues that they've been having. After one such issue this morning, that's got him out of bed at 2:30. The poor handling of it. Yeah. He's moving up the time frame. So he moved those servers. The only thing that we saw as a result of that was an issue with the FTP, which has now been resolved.
The subject of a next thread.
Yes, exactly.
Another thread.
Then I asked how to check if the intro and outro are added, because if the intro and outro are added, if we can determine that, then that's one less question that we need to ask on the website, which is which is better. The only thing, sometimes I need to contact hosts when I see that the intro isn't added. And I process it that way, and then I listen to it, and then we have two HPR intros on it. Or they say that it is added, and then I process it that way, and then there's no intro. Then I have to go back and delete all the files and clean everything up. So I would really be nice to have a way to at least, yes, I can confirm that the HPR intro is there, confirm that the HPR outro is there. That would be nice to have.
You know, I might talk to... we've got a professor on faculty who deals with our media students, and he might know a solution to this kind of thing. I don't know if he would know one that's scriptable, but he might be able to point me to something. And he's really, really good with audio analysis and stuff like that.
Cool. If you, because Carl D. Hammann, replied with echoprint.me, which looks very, very interesting to do fingerprinting mm-hmm. of particular music for deduplication of your record collection or identification of songs in your record collection. So we would be kind of doing it backwards. We would register that song and then see if we could find it within that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I followed that thread, but it sounded like both, like everyone in the thread said it sounded really promising, but that they were out of their depth.
Yes, yes. So if you could bring that to your friend, then we would, and just send us the code. That would be absolutely awesome.
Yeah, I'll talk to him about it.
Then so
a bunch of New Year's shows updates.
Yeah, I'm just going to skip over all of those as well. And I made a change to the upload thing because. I'm kind of paranoid, I must say, when it comes to accepting random stuff from random strangers on the internet, especially when your site is called Hacker Public Radio. So up until now, I've been just checking you click, you put in your email, it sends you a link, you click on the link, and then you go to the webpage. So if you don't click on the link after a while, after a few minutes, it's basically that entry is removed. However, if you do click on the link and you don't process the show, then it remains in that state forever because I worked, oh, okay, it's a random link. Okay, that's fine. Problem with that, though, is if we don't have a lot of shows in the queue and we need to say, you know, tomorrow's show needs to be filled and somebody goes and locks that show, then we have a problem. So, what I'm doing now is I'm going to make sure that is blocked. So if somebody, we free that up after 4 hours instead of indefinitely. So at the minute I'm not doing it, I'll do it manually, but I do keep an eye on that. But I'm working on a cron job script to do that, to clean it up. And we may also, if it becomes a thing where people are being naughty, we might need to either ban those email addresses or IP addresses, but we'll see how it goes. As far as HPR community stuff goes and how the show, the direction we should take, that's always done on the mailing list. But as far as security issues are concerned, we have a very clear line that we will do whatever it takes to protect the servers and infrastructure.
Very good.
So that's why sometimes people are not consulted on security decisions.
Makes perfect sense.
And then we had a big long thread about the FTP server issues. So I don't know if you want to go into the result of that.
Well, the result is that it's fixed. I mean, the issue is that there was some mode or protocol that no longer worked after the site changed. And like for that, such that I was not able to upload shows using FileZilla, which is what I normally had used as my FTP client. But it did work when I just used straight old command line FTP, and so I used that. But it sounds like Josh, I guess, has solved the issue and everything's working normally again.
And I think it was a case where Josh knew exactly what was wrong and was not in a physical location. To be able to resolve us given the time of year and family and all the rest. So
yeah, well, there was an easy enough workaround and he fixed it, so it's all good.
And during that entire thing, the upload via HTTP, John was available. Upload via HTTP, nudge nudge, wink wink.
Yeah, only the problem is that I would have done that if I had still had access to that page.
Okay, the nudge nudge wink wink back to myself, yes.
Yeah, enough. I mean, because I actually tried that. I tried going back to my email and clicking that link, but then once you have clicked submit, you no longer have access to that page.
Yeah, you're done, yeah. I'm going to, instead of investing time in all the WYSIWYG stuff, I'm just going to focus on that so that when the show gets posted, people can look at the show and go, oh, that's crap, I'll go back and I'll edit it again.
Yeah. That's probably time well spent there.
Yeah, and I also want to, I've been thinking about in your profile, when you upload a show, you can fill in your email key, so your GPG key or PG key.
Mm-hmm. Your public key.
Basically, yes. And what I was thinking about there was to make sure that people are able to edit their own shows and post their own shows without any, you know, you can self-approve your own shows, basically, mm-hmm. right? Because right now we will not accept any shows without it being verified by, you know, volunteers, basically, which mm-hmm. will be the admin list and whoever happens to be on that. And that kind of makes sense because you need to check for, you know, cross-site vulnerabilities, blah, 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 attacks yeah. on the website and stuff. However, there are certain people who have posted enough shows and we know who they are. So if you have a signed key, then you will be getting a signed something or other from wherever. And then those people who are quote unquote trusted would be able to basically post their own shows without and go back and edit their shows without having to go through the authorization thing.
That sounds like a good plan going forward to take some of the load off you guys.
Yeah, no, it's not. It's more that this is a peer community, so by definition we shouldn't be involved at all, so we should just automate yeah. it and have the peers review it themselves. Because I got a email from somebody during the week which I asked brought up brought up some very interesting questions about you know, the stance HBR takes and should we that we should be curating the audio that's been sent in, and that there's a need for that. And I said, yeah, fair enough, there is, but that's not what HBR is about. HBR is about, you know, posting shows. And he or she made the comments that, yeah, but you could get somebody submitting 3 hours of farts, and if that's of interest to hackers, that's allowed. And I'm going, yep, actually, that would be posted in our current way, but, you know, we've managed to run for 10 years without that happening. And any of the shows that are out right. of the ordinary have been the ones that have caused the most interest to people.
You know, I found that to be the case as well. You know, I really thought twice before posting things like the one about folding a fitted sheet or about the flashlight. But, you know, people seem to respond to those more than some of the technical ones that I do.
Yeah, I think the technical ones, people file them as, yes, I know I've heard that, and now I know where to go back and get it if needs be. And, you know, on those ones, I've said it before, you know, you get comments 2 years later, 3 years later from people going, yeah, I heard your show, and, you know, there's an easier way to do that. Yes, there is now, but there wasn't at the time. So, right. you know, but these out of the ordinary shows are like a little bit of life refreshment in between. And now for something completely different, as this.
There we go. Yep, so the last topic was IRC etiquette, or a requested topic.
Yes, exactly. Requested topics. Just so you know, if you want to request a topic, you can either send a tweet at HPR with the requested topic, or send it to the mail list, or just admin@hackerpublicradio.org will also work.
And I might even, I'm kind of a noob at IRC. I mean, I've done it a number of times, but like I learned just in the last couple of weeks some tricks that apparently people who are old school IRC. Right, well, I use, there's that. But NY Bill taught me over the course of a few exchanges on IRC how to get IRC going on my server and then connect to it using TMUX. And you know, these are awesome tricks that I never knew about. I guess Bill actually did do an HPR episode about that. And that's what I went and listened to figure out how to do it. But then like I couldn't figure out basic things like how to exit a channel without quitting all the way out of IRC and stuff like that. So yeah. You might be surprised how basic it needs to be for someone even like me, who's pretty good technically, who just hasn't ever done that before.
And this is exactly why I ask it, because I've got an IRSSI session in the screen session, and I go into that and that's what I do. Because I have no clue. Everything outside of that, I have no clue. And also, I walked into the room and I was asking Hunky and 5150 for stuff. I never once, you know, thought that I might be flaming them, because it's absolutely not my intention to do that. You know, I was having this, you know, round the cooler conversation with these guys, you know. But obviously that's not what you should be doing. So I should have a personal message to them, I think, but I don't know how to do that. So yeah, there you go.
Nor do I. I don't know how to either.
Well, it was funny because I listened to the day. So today's IRC logs, I will listen to, I do text-to-speech and the log files, and I listen to those log files then either, you know, coming home from work and stuff. And then as I was listening to one of the days, it was like, John Culp hits Dave Morris with a fish. John Culp hits Thingy with a fish. It was quite funny.
Well, somebody has set... Are you the one who set up those shortcuts on the web interface of... It was on Ogcast Planet on the web interface.
Nope, don't know.
If you click the link at the bottom of the HPR website, there's a link to Ogcast Planet, and can log into the IRC on a web browser, and that's what I did. And there's, like, if you right-click or just click on somebody's ID name in the right-hand column, you have a few options, one of which is to slap them with a fish. And so that's what I was doing.
Excellent.
Yeah, so maybe a good topic, not only IRC etiquette, but how to set up things like the bot responses, and I guess these are scripting things where it's listening for certain keywords and then it responds with preloaded text or something.
The HBR bot and stuff is done like that. That's I can see his name in my face, but I can't put a name on him. Hold on one sec. Crayon, of course. Crayon.
Okay.
And
he the one who wrote the bot?
Yeah, he has the bot running. So, like, he parses the HBR website and then posts a show when the show comes out. And I just log into IRC as the first thing in the morning. And I was hitting a dot to see if anybody had left me messages in the night, because I'm pretty much out of the time zone. That there's quite a good overlap between Australia and the US, but not, I'm kind of out of it. So if somebody leaves me a message, I have to hit something, send a message before the bots realize I'm awake again. So
so when you say that you were listening to the logs, do you have this read back to you with a text-to-speech or something?
Yeah, I do lots and lots of stuff with text-to-speech. Just pipe it through eSpeak and you play it.
That's pretty cool. I've never really used it. I mean, I use eSpeak all the time in conjunction with Blather for the various commands that I do with my voice, but I've never really used it as far as to consume information that I have in text format.
Yeah, it saves my life. I have to read lots and lots of specifications and stuff. And, you know, you're going through, page after page after page of stuff. And I'll just stand up, I've got a standing desk, and I'll put on the headphones and I'll have the PDF or whatever open and I'll just follow along. And then, you know, you're there and then suddenly you hear somebody going, "And the vendor will not be held responsible for any damage." Hold on. Whoa, hold your horses. And then you look at the like the PDF, and it's this tiny thing snuck in, and you go, "Oh, you snake." Uh-huh.
That's pretty cool. Do you set eSpeak to read at super high speed, or do you how do you deal with that?
Yeah, twice the limit.
Two times? Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
We have some additional comments to shows from before, and this first one was on a show, Raspberry Pi Accessibility Breakthrough, and it was by Mike Ray about Quiet Boot. I'm not sure why Quiet Boot messages should suddenly only start being heard when the audio code I wrote is employed, but to silence them, you can put quiet at the end of the single line in boot command line dot text. So that's an ongoing discussion that he's having over there.
Okay.
Response to Ahuka's home SSH server 1870 episode, there was a comment by
X0XF10.
That's the one. Yep.
I wish people they need to give instructions on how to pronounce these user names here.
The subject. It's just hex. It's a. F10E, that's it.
I wonder what color that is. Is that a hex color, or is that a...
It could be an age. Let me see. Oh, you know, you're forcing me to go and find out what... Yeah, it could be anything.
Don't bother. But anyway, he says, "Yep, no clear text. First thing is DH key exchange. Basically, quote, know that we speak privately and securely. Let me tell you who I, the server, am," end quote. Think about it. Any other way would leave the client open to a man-in-the-middle spoofing the server's keys. But of course, when you ignore the changed fingerprint on the server, you won't know who's receiving your credentials. With PubKey Auth, you don't have to worry about losing anything usable to impersonate you. also makes brute force login attempts infeasible due to the vast number of possible keys.
Exactly. Mel, I don't know what happened there, but we got disconnected from the server. Hi, John, can you hear me?
Oh, I'm back.
And Kevin's here, but he's quiet.
I'm not sure what happened there. I was disconnected from the server, and then it kept trying to reconnect, and it was refusing the connection. I just pinged you in the IRC channel, but you may not have seen it yet.
Okay.
Anyway, back.
What was the last you heard?
I think the last I heard was about the SSH pub key authentication thing, the comment that I read out, actually. Man, these are a lot of comments here. I'm running out of battery power on my laptop as well.
Okay, let's quickly go through some of them. So we had that key exchange. There was also a comment from Eric asking for Lux encrypted ISO command. There was a comment by Clinton Roy explaining that they have an awful lot of... they also have problems with mosquitoes in Brisbane.
Mm-hmm.
And Frank posted a comment to free my music, get music off the Mac. Out of curiosity, he's never used a Mac. Why do you need root to copy your own files? Postscript, to copy file with a space name, you can either escape the space with the preceding backslash or enclose it in quotes. Actually, good point. I wanted to mention that as well.
Yep.
Then we had two comments to apt splunking, TV time, patch, and starfish from Windigo. And the first one was from Windigo. The definition, it's definitely not an terribly intuitive interface. And this is related to a comment of Dave Morris. I think it applies all the actions you add to each image, and you have to very explicitly assemble a chain. And Dave replies that it seems to have a lot of potential. He's assembled several pictures for HBR episodes. He wants to scrape the metadata and stuff. I know that patch is all about do stuff to stuff. I do understand the do stuff, please, but find the to stuff a bit cryptic.
I'll be honest, I don't remember what package this is, this patch. I'll have to go back and look and see what it is.
It was chaining image processing. It was pretty...
Yeah.
So this was Charlie Reisinger on Penn Manor comment when Klaatu interviewed him. And loved the interview. And Charles in NJ put in a comment. And this basically with a link to a TEDx video. And I watched this video. And to be honest, I was... welling up with tears at the end of it. So nice.
I missed that. It totally escaped my attention. I'll have to go watch that later.
Then we had to your episode actually on open embedded media music textbook. We had a comment from Frank saying, though it's been a long time since I have to buy one, I fully share your sentiments about college textbook industries. The publisher blocks the path to learning, raising their flintlocks to students and cry, stand and deliver.
Something like that.
I had to chuckle when I read that, I must say.
Yeah, thanks, Frank.
And on episode QMMP, the QT-based multimedia player by Frank Bell, Frank replied, it was... nice to feel a bit of nostalgia. You make me feel old, will you? Well, I'm old. I've never been a senior. I will be a cranky old man. You young whippersnappers with your newfangled media players. And that, I think, is it for this month. The rest were comments that we've already covered in the show.
Alrighty.
Anything else that we need to talk about, John?
It's probably gone on long enough. We've tested everyone's patience to the extent that we should. I think we're done.
I am surprised people listen through these shows, even the ones that I do myself. I know that people listen to them, and it shocks me. Sometimes I wonder, is there any point doing a show every month just about all the shows that you've heard, and all this information is freely available to everybody? So,
but I think there is, because I mean, there are a couple of things that we just touched on that I missed during the month, and I'm going to go back and check them out now. And yep. I do listen to this whole episode normally, but I, of course, do it at about 1.7 times speed. And so it's not quite as long as it seems.
Yeah, true enough. The reason I started in the first place was because quite often hosts Well, basically, people don't give feedback ever. People do not give feedback. A lot of the feedback that you get, there's a lot more feedback now than there was. So if there's anything that you can do for the community, it's to give people feedback. There is nothing as cool as getting somebody going, hey, man, thanks very much. Liked your show. That is, it just brightens up your day. Your whole day is brightened up with that.
I agree. And, you know, and people... Well, sometimes I wish more people would give feedback here on these comments so that they would be a public. Because like when I first logged into the IRC recently, I had several people in there say, oh, by the way, I've really been enjoying your HPR episodes. And I'm like, you know, this is the first I've heard of it from these people. And I never knew. So it'd be cool if they would post on the website here, too, so that we get that feedback immediately.
I will give Dave his tasks now that he's sick to filter through the IRC logs and filter out all the comments for HPR.
Oh, he'll love that as a scripting challenge.
Throwing his Sansa clip across the room when he hears that one. But you know what, Dave? All you need to do is put the seed in the back of his mind and he won't be able to stop himself.
Yeah, I know that about Dave. That's funny.
Excellent stuff. We will actually be meeting up with Dave this time next month. Dave and I are heading over to Fosdem again and bringing my nephew over to the free open source conference in Brussels.
Awesome. I wish I could be there.
Yes,
I will
indeed.
Be busy learning how to be the boss in my job here.
Yes, sir. Well, good luck with that, John.
Thank you. I'm a little apprehensive, but I'm gonna do my best. It probably means fewer HPR episodes, but I'm still going to try to put the odd episode out anyway.
Yeah, also, folks, I had a look at the schedule, and it was a bit scary there for a while this month. And now that John and Ahuka are stepping back a little, we do need people to jump on in. And remember your New Year's resolution. One show a year, that's all we're asking for, folks. One show a year.
Not that hard.
No, it's not actually. And once you get into it, it's kind of cool. You see, come along, you do a few shows, and then you think, hey, I wonder would people be interested in that? And then you do it, and people love you, and you're stopped in the street, and pretty cool.
Tell you what, man, it can be hard to deal with the fame that comes from this, though.
It is. Yes, indeedy. Yes, indeedy.
All right, Ken, are we done?
Are done. Thank you, John. Made it a lot easier doing the show. Alrighty.
It was fun.
Talk to you later. Bye.
Okay, bye.
Oh, tune in tomorrow for another exciting episode of Hacker Public Radio.
Are you going to sing that song now?
Join us now and share the software. You'll be free, hackers. You'll be free. I now actually have to edit this because I got three different sections to this. I have my kids come on and say hello because we hadn't said hello during the New Year show. And that's now a tradition.
Cool.
All right, John. All the best. See you later.
Okay. See
you. Bye.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HBR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license.
Hi everybody, my name is Ken Fallon and you're listening to the HPR Community News Show for December 2015. It's, for those of you new to HPR, Hacker Public Radio is your ideas, projects and opinions podcasted. New episodes every Monday through Friday, and this being the first show of the year, the community show of the year, I would like my children to come on and say hello to everybody.
Hello.
Happy New Year.
Yeah, we kind of forgot to do that during the festivities this year because basically I fell asleep on the couch. Okay. Go to bed. Yeah.
Gizzy. We still have to have dinner.
Gizzy.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
And then you'll
Yeah.